Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Papal Audience. Pope Benedict expresses his spiritual closeness to participants at the 49th International Eucharistic Congress, now underway in Canada, during his weekly general audience. Saved from extermination. As the Church prepares to mark the 50th anniversary of the death of Pope Pius XII, we speak to a group of Jewish Holocaust survivors who came to Rome to thank Pope Benedict for the Church's intervention in saving their lives during the war. We listen to their dramatic testimony and find out more about efforts to clear up misunderstandings over the role of Pius XII and the Church during the Nazi persecution of the Jews. Here in the Vatican, Pope Benedict spoke of his spiritual closeness to participants at the 49th International Eucharistic Congress, now underway in Quebec, Canada. His words came at the end of his weekly general audience, during which he focused on the figure of the 7th century Spanish bishop, St. Isidore of Seville. Emma McCarthy reports.
On Wednesday, Pope Benedict XVI invited Christians worldwide to pray that the International Eucharistic Congress rekindle awareness in the faithful of those evangelical values that have forged the Catholic identity down through the centuries. The Pope was speaking in Italian to pilgrims attending his weekly general audience in St. Peter's Square.
Mi rendo spiritualmente presente in così solenne incontro ecclesiale.
Shaded from the beating sun by a large white canopy, the Pope said he was spiritually close to the Congress participants drawn from Africa, Asia, the Americas and Europe, and expressed his hope that it be an occasion of prayer, reflection and contemplation on the mystery of the Holy Eucharist. Pope Benedict's words followed on from his teaching on the life of St. Isidore of Seville, the brother of St. Leander and contemporary and friend of St. Gregory the Great.
Isidore lived during the Visigothic invasions of Spain, and he devoted much energy to converting the barbarian tribes from heresy and preserving the best fruits of classical and Christian culture. His encyclopedic, albeit somewhat eclectic, learning is reflected in his many writings, including the etymologies, which were widely read throughout the Middle Ages. Isidore worked to bring the richness of pagan, Jewish, and Christian learning to the rapidly changing political, social, and religious situations in which he lived.
Pope Benedict paused to reflect at length on this Spanish saint's insistence on prayer and mission. Often during his life, noted the Pope, St. Isidore struggled with conflicting desires.
Throughout his life, he was torn between his devotion to study and contemplation and the demands made by his personal responsibilities as a bishop, especially towards the poor and those in need. He found his model in Christ, who joined both the active and contemplative life and sought to love God in contemplation and one's neighbor in action.
This, concluded Pope Benedict, is a lesson which is as valid today as it was in the life of the great Bishop of Seville. I'm Emma McCarthy.
The Vatican has announced plans to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the death of Pope Pius XII, who ruled from 1939 to 1958. The commemorative events include a seminar in November to examine the wartime Pope's encyclicals and magisterium, and a photographic exhibition covering his life from boyhood to death. Bishop Salvatore Fisichella, rector of the Pontifical Lateran University, spoke of the wartime Pope's great stature, especially in spiritual terms, but also intellectually and diplomatically. Pope Pius XII has been criticised in some quarters for not speaking up enough against the Nazi persecution of the Jews. However, the Vatican has denied these charges, pointing out that the wartime Pope worked hard behind the scenes and that any bolder public moves would have only angered Hitler and accelerated the extermination of the Jews. In another development, a group of Jewish Holocaust survivors met Pope Benedict at the end of his general audience today to personally thank him for the Church's intervention in saving their lives during the Second World War. Their trip to Rome was organised by the New York-based Pave the Way Foundation, an organisation that is dedicated to achieving peace by increasing tolerance and understanding between religions through concrete gestures of goodwill between the faiths. Some of these numerous gestures included organising the largest Jewish audience in history to thank Pope John Paul II for all he did for religious reconciliation and helping to arrange the first loan ever from the Vatican Library to the State of Israel. Another initiative of the Foundation is a planned symposium on the papacy of Pope Pius XII and particularly his wartime role, scheduled to be held in Rome this September. Through investigations, the Foundation says it has uncovered secret activities of Pope Pius XII and members of the papal household to save the lives of Jews during the war. The audience at the symposium will be over 100 mostly Jewish religious, education and community leaders from around the world. The participants will be presented with historical newspaper accounts, documents and eyewitness testimony from those who are still alive. The purpose of the symposium will be to analyse what is known to date, while Vatican archivists continue to prepare for future release thousands of documents covering the wartime period. The founder and president of the Pave the Way Foundation is Gary Krupp. He's the seventh Jewish man in history to be knighted to the Pontifical Equestrian Order of St. Gregory the Great. He spoke to me about his foundation's aims and why he changed his mind about the wartime role of Pope Pius XII.
Pave the Way identifies obstacles between religions, and we institute gestures between religions, two very important things. And one obstacle, which is what we're working on right now, is the papacy of Pope Pius XII. And so we've called a large Jewish symposium, and that will be taking place here in Rome in September. And we have over 100 delegates who have already signed on, very prominent rabbis, historians, scholars, Jewish community leaders, who are coming here to Rome to learn for the first time exactly what occurred during the wartime years. And we're working with the Vatican historians and with the experts of the papacy, and we're hoping that the experts from the Jewish on the Jewish side will also attend, so questions can be asked and answered.
Do you think they will shed new light? Because, as you well know, Pope Pius has been criticized in some quarters for being anti-Semitic.
Absolutely incorrect. It's 100% incorrect. And I can...
Why did it start?
It started in 1963 with a play which was actually financed and controlled by the KGB. And that play was called The Deputy. And it was written by a German by the name of Ralph Holkhoff. And it demonized the Pope and blamed him and accused him of being an anti-Semite and blamed him for, because of his silence, that he was complicit with the Nazis. And we have absolute confirmed proof. Now, my wife Meredith and I found it. We grew up thinking that he was a terrible man. And because of what we've done, our foundation has been going around the world interviewing eyewitnesses who were with the Pope personally. And one of whom, and all of these are available on our website, ptwf.org, on the page for Pave the Way Foundation. You can see all of our interviews. And they're dynamic, some of the things, absolutely proving that this entire impression is wrong. And when I've asked Yad Vashem and people who are supposedly the experts in this area, if they've ever heard of these things, they've never heard of any of them. They never heard of the plan that Hitler had to kidnap Pius XII, kill the Roman Curia, and seize the Vatican. This was a plan that General Karl Wolff was forced to create, and we have a Jewish journalist, Dan Kurzman, who wrote a book about this subject. And he will be with us in Rome also explaining. And this has been confirmed by the Vatican as well.
So are you very optimistic that this seminar will go a long way towards clearing his name?
Far more than optimistic. I'm positive, because this is a collective group of brilliant Jewish people, not just adults. We have teenagers coming as well. Fair-minded thing. That was the thing. Be fair-minded, and you will act as a jury. You will see exactly what we did and the genesis of events that occurred from the time he was a young boy growing up with his closest friend being Jewish, Guido Mendes. And the Pope used to eat kosher food. And then with his intervention as the nuncio in Germany to save Jews who were arrested for anti-Semitic reasons, where he interceded, anti-Semites do not do this. And then other events that occurred that once he had become Pope, which will be all brought out, it'll be a fantastic array of information, because you can only come up with one conclusion. That is the truth of this papacy, that this man, of all the world leaders, saved more Jewish lives than anybody in history.
But the thing was, he was doing it behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes and all silently. Not just because of the fact that there was that he knew that he would be, if they aroused suspicion that Hitler would, you know, he would order the kidnapping. He was not afraid of this. What happened was that when the Pope spoke out, for example, with the Archbishop of Utrecht and the arrest of the Dutch Jews, how did the Germans react? They reacted very clearly. They said, this from the Roman Catholic Church will not save one Jewish life. In fact, we will accelerate the arrests. And before, we never considered arresting the Jews who converted to Roman Catholicism. They're now the first to go. In that time, St. Edith Stein was arrested. And Father Peter Gumpel, who was here, who was the relative to the cause, was in Holland at the time this happened. And he was a witness to this. So these are things, and the Pope learned very quickly. Also with the bringing his Christmas message into Poland. The Polish bishop, please don't say anything, because it's going to accelerate the arrest. So they learned very quickly that this would be extremely dangerous. He had to do everything under the table, quietly, silently.
You have come here with a group of Holocaust survivors. What stories emerge from their testimony that prove, that help to support your view and the view of many others, of course, that Pope Pius wasn't anti-Semitic and that he was doing all this?
Well, actually, understand that most Jewish survivors would never have contact with the Pope.
Not the Pope directly,
but certainly with the Catholic Church. Each one of these people are coming, and I'm bringing them before the Holy Father, and they want to thank the Pope for the intervention of the Roman Catholic Church in saving their lives. Now, this is not just in sheltering them, when they all have stories of being sheltered by the Church, but also in the Church's intervention to make sure that they were well taken care of and so on. Many, many stories like this, and there are thousands and thousands of them. The problem is that we've decided to do this symposium now, and many of these people are gone. So we're trying to find those people who can give testimony to this. Yad Vashem's entire exhibit is based on personal testimony, and we want to do exactly the same thing, eyewitness testimony, which will absolutely prove our position.
Now, I gather you talked to an important survivor, shall we say, somebody who's still alive, although he's in his 90s.
He's a priest. That's right.
Monsignor Ferrofino, who was an envoy with Pius XII. Tell us something about this.
It was a remarkable interview, because we never expected this, and the Vatican was shocked when they heard. This man was personally with Pius XII on many occasions, because the Pope insisted on seeing his diplomatic emissaries in person. And he relates the story of how he was with the Pope, and the Pope would slam his hand down on the table. And this interview is on our website, ptwf.org, on the page for Pius XII. You look at the interview, it's unbelievable. And where the Pope would slam his hand on the table, he said, "We have to do something to save this vibrant Jewish community. Why aren't the Americans doing more? Why aren't the Spanish doing more?" And he's very, very animated about this. And then explained how the Pope sent him to the president of Portugal to get visas for Jews coming in. And he said, I showed him the note, but I couldn't express the feeling that the Pope had for this, the strong feeling he had for this. Then he was sent by the Vatican to become the secretary to the nuncio of the Dominican Republic. And this was Archbishop Silvani. He traveled on a boat called the Serapinto, which had 800 Jews, the visas were obtained by the Vatican for these people to go to the Dominican Republic. And seven priests, seven Catholics, and 800 Jews. I was the chaplain on the boat. So they went there, and he physically would receive a telegram at least twice a year from the Pope that was doubly encrypted. So if somebody would go through the archives today and see a telegram, they won't know what it says. It's doubly encrypted, and he would tell the key. There was a key in there, and he explained how he had to decipher it. He would decipher the telegram.
And what was it saying?
It said it was asking General Trujillo for 800 visas Jews for the Jews that they were about to bring over from Europe. And he and Archbishop Silvani would drive 1.5 days from Port-au-Prince to see General Trujillo in the Dominican Republic. And he would have to say, he would only receive the representative of the Pope. Archbishop Silvani was the only one who could come. And he would say, in the name of Pope Pius XII, I am asking for a favor for 800 visas for Jews. This happened twice a year, from 1939 to 1945. Oscar Schindler was praised, and is to this day praised, for saving 1,600 Jewish lives. And in this one instance, the Pope saved 1,600 lives every year from 1939 to 1945. They would make at least 2 boatloads of these people coming over. And this is one instance that I found. And I'm not a historian. And I was able to find him through the help of Sister Margherita Marchione, who had this testimony. She gave me some of these leads, and we've been following them up. This is remarkable information, stuff that was done in top secret. Yad Vashem knew nothing about this. The Vatican knew nothing about this. So there's a major gap of intellect which we need to close, because this is a 45-year-old infection between 2 loving brothers, Catholics and Jews, that must be cleared up. That's what we've identified, Pave the Way has identified, and that's what our object is.
I was speaking there to Gary Krupp, founder and president of the Pave the Way Foundation. But now, let's shine the spotlight on this group of elderly Jewish survivors of the Nazi Holocaust, who travelled all the way to Rome with the Pave the Way Foundation because they wanted to personally thank Pope Benedict for the Church's intervention in saving their lives during the Second World War. I spoke to several of these survivors and learnt more about their dramatic life history and how they managed to escape deportation and almost certain death during the Nazi occupation of Italy. Let's hear some of those testimonies now. The first person I spoke to was Ursula Selig. She was born in Germany but came to Italy shortly before the outbreak of the Second World War. She told me that her own life and that of her parents was saved through the intervention of a courageous Catholic priest.
I was saved by a priest in a town called Città di Castello in Umbria. We were interned when the war broke out in a small town. We were transferred to this larger town. I met the priest. He was the rector of a seminary. And in 1943, when the Germans occupied Italy, he helped us being in hiding. We were in hiding for 1 year with the help of this priest.
And then were you discovered, or did he manage to transfer you to another country? Tell us what happened.
No. We were hidden in Città di Castello, where we were interned, in that town where everyone knew us. He hid us from one place to another until the British army liberated that town. We were hidden in sewers, in the mountains, in an abandoned villa, and the last 3 months my mother and I dressed as nuns in a convent.
Okay, so you tell me that this priest, not only did he save you, but he was also quite clever in the way he did it, because he separated you from your father?
Yeah, at one point we had to be separated. So he hid my father 8 hours away from Città di Castello, which is a town where we were interned. I was reunited with my father but 8 months after we were liberated.
Why did you have to be separated? Was it
because
too risky?
My mother and I were hidden in a convent dressed as nuns. And obviously my father is not a nun. So he was hidden with an anti-fascist farmer.
So if this priest hadn't done that, you wouldn't be alive today?
I would not be here today if this priest would not have saved my life.
And have you kept in touch with him ever since?
Very much. He's like my father. We speak 3-4 times a week on the phone. He was in Israel with me. We planted a tree. He's been in New York. He's been honored for saving Jewish lives.
And were there other people alongside you?
My parents and I.
I see. And when you hear these stories that Pope Pius XII was anti-Semitic, that he didn't do enough to stop Hitler, what's your reaction?
My reaction is that I lived under Pacelli in Italy, and I know that if we would have spoken up, maybe more of us would have been killed. This is my personal opinion. What he didn't do is he did not tell the clergy not to help Jews. And many of us are here because the clergy helped us.
Now, this priest who helped you, if he'd been discovered, what would have happened to
him? He would have been shot on sight.
What was the name of this priest?
This priest's name is Monsignor Beniamino Schivo.
And you say he's still alive today but in poor health?
Well, he's 97 and a half. I just booked him yesterday. He's okay, but the trip to Rome was too much for him.
Did you come into contact with any other priests or members of the church during the war?
I went to school in a convent, in a Benedictine convent. During the time we were interned, the bishop of that town let me go to school with the permission of the police. So I went to school in a Benedictine convent. I didn't sleep there, but I went there every day to go to school.
And that was unusual for a Jewish person?
Very unusual.
So you're going to be meeting Pope Benedict tomorrow. What are your feelings about this? What message would you like to be giving him?
Well, I think my message is that I'm born in Germany, and so is the Pope. And I'm here because somebody in the Catholic Church saved my life.
That was Ursula Selig, a German-born Jew and survivor of the Nazi Holocaust, who now lives in America. The next person I spoke to was Georgina Vitali, an Italian Jew who also managed to survive the Nazi Holocaust and now lives in the US. Let's hear her testimony.
Well, I lived in Torino and Milano, went to school in Milano. When the racial law started in 1938, I was 12 years old and we had restriction, but we were still living. Mm. Of course, that all changed in 1943 when the Germans occupied Italy. My father had procured false papers for us and had rented a small place in a small town in Piemonte by the name of Pier d'Asti. And we went there and with our new name, we started a new life.
And how did the church in particular help to save you there? What role did it play?
Well, it didn't really play too much of a role in the beginning. I know that the priest had a Jewish family staying in his house, five people. The fact is that we lived in this town with false paper. We lived like Catholics. I went to church every Sunday and we felt secure that, people thought we were Catholics. After 2 years, Italy was liberated. We found out that the people of the town, they all knew we were Jewish, and including the priest.
And you're saying that the whole town, not just the priest, but the whole town helped save us.
They never said a word to us or to the Germans or the fascists who were there all the time. So it was, I would say it's a miraculous thing that the whole town would do that for a family.
Was it just your family or were there other Jewish families?
There was another Jewish family who lived in the priest's house.
That was Georgina Vitali, an Italian-born Jew and Holocaust survivor, now living in America. The third survivor I spoke to was Horst Stein, who was born in Germany, but who, together with his family, fled to Italy as the Nazi persecution of Jews picked up apace. Let's hear his testimony.
In 1938, Hitler made Mussolini put all the immigrant Jews into camps. And my camp was in Civitella del Tronto, negli Abruzzi. And we were there for the duration. And there wasn't anybody who ever cared about us. I know next nearby was a camp of Jews from Tripoli, British citizens, and the Red Cross, they sent them packages, foods. We were completely forgotten until an emissary of the Vatican came and talked to us and gave us the moral support to continue to live and have hope that eventually will be liberated.
People criticize Pope Pius XII because he didn't speak out more openly to criticize what Hitler was doing, what was happening. What's your view on this?
Well, first of all, what could he have done? Declare war on Germany with the 22 Swiss Guards he had? That's impossible. The only thing he could do is what he did. Since he was before in Germany, he knew exactly the German mentality, and the only way to beat them was intelligently, and that's what he did. And this is why Rome, perhaps it was through Kesselring, Rome was declared open city, and the Vatican and Rome were saved by his doing, by his not doing anything.
That was Horst Stein, a German-born Jew and Holocaust survivor, now living in America. Another person accompanying the Holocaust survivors on their trip to Rome to meet the Pope was Vincent Mamorali, a human rights activist in New York and an expert on the history of the Holocaust. He says the very important role played by Italian individuals and the Catholic Church there in helping to save the lives of Jews during the Nazi occupation of their country has not been fully recognized.
I've been involved in Holocaust education for about 30 years, and the Italian story was really the missing part to the puzzle. We found that even so-called Holocaust museums and throughout the United States overlook the Italian story.
Why is that?
I think it's the complexity of it. It involves the three parts, which is the Italian government, the Italian people, and the Vatican. And for many historians, separating the three seems to pose an intellectual challenge for them.
The figures show that whereas the vast majority of Jews who were arrested in other countries perished, that in Italy, the majority of them survived.
That's an excellent point. Over 80% of the Jews in occupied Europe died. Over 80% of the Jews in Italy survived, along with the fact that Italy had open borders prior to World War II, and thousands of German and Austrian Jews came to Italy and were saved. That's an excellent point. Over 80% of the Jews in occupied Europe died. Over 80% of the Jews in Italy survived, along with the fact that Italy had open borders prior to World War II, and thousands of German and Austrian Jews came to Italy and were saved. And we found in our research that there was a common denominator, that many of the people I knew were helped indirectly or directly by church people, whether it be nuns, whether it was priests, or someone who a priest would send them to get documents, and local people who knew. And I think it was the interpretation of Christianity in Italy that was different from the rest of Europe. They viewed these people as persecuted. They wanted to help them. Also, in Italy, there was a relative lack of anti-Semitism in Italy. And there was a genuine feeling that these people were persecuted and that something should be done to help them. And they knew the risks. And over 40,000 Jews were saved in Italy. And unfortunately, this isn't really known. And again, I don't think it's a coincidence that so many of the religious people throughout Italy did the right thing, not just in one place. The two in Campania, for example, they saved over 1,000 Jews in a convent. That's just one example. In Assisi, they saved over 300, and no one was ever turned in.
And it's not just, shall we say, the monks or the religious sisters in the convent, but it's also some of the more higher-ranking
yes.
clergy that were involved
yes,
in saving
absolutely.
Lives.
Yes, absolutely. On the rank of archbishop and cardinals, especially in the city of Assisi. Nothing happened in Italy involving the saving of Jews that was not known by higher church officials. It was known that no one broke that rule without the understanding that the Holy Father approved of it. But again, it was done with a wink and a nod. It was a subliminal way. But it happened all over Italy.
That was Vincent Mamorali, a human rights activist and an expert on the history of the Holocaust. And that's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. Don't forget, you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.